ways. One thing that Coca-Cola has done to kind of separate themselves is they come up with those machines where they have multiple just cartridges of
Right.
liquid that you have at the movie theater now, and Pepsi quite hasn't reached that point. But that was an innovation so Coca-Cola can not only maintain market share but lower the cost of offering Coca-Cola at your establishment versus Pepsi, which are still shipping only the large boxes of syrup that you have to have a good at least 5x5 space to store it all, depending on how many selected Pepsi products you have.
Which is interesting. And I know we're wrapping up the show, but regarding Pizza Hut, I mean, Pizza Hut has become the official spokesperson for the NFL now. So that's something that it's just random for us to discuss it, but that's something to look into as well. I mean, Papa John's no more. Pizza Hut is now, you know, becoming the face of the NFL.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love this. What we're doing, because I'm starting to learn more and I'm reading more, and it's putting me into places and things I probably would have never considered otherwise. So
it's
fees always win.
Yeah, fees always win. And look at those fees, and we encourage you to. But is there anything you wanted to add for this episode? We're kind of hitting our maximum time limit, but
well. We can hit on it now, but maybe we can discuss it later regarding the article that I was talking about, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, how basically you're going to be taxed for that now. The IRS is coming to find you. We can possibly touch on that next week.
No, I think we have time. So if you wanted to kind of go over an overview of the article.
Yeah, so basically there's an article talking about I don't have the article in front of me. I forget the company, but basically cryptocurrency in general. Typically, I think that it wasn't taxed or you weren't able to necessarily get into it because it's digital currency. Well, based on the article, you can be looking forward to being taxed on that digital currency moving forward because there, I think it was up to, what, $20 million or something like that. So for the big boom in cryptocurrency, that's something you want to look out for moving forward for those that are interested in it or maybe accessing funds that way. Be prepared to have your information provided to Uncle Sam, and Uncle Sam is going to be coming to get their money. So just be prepared for that to happen in the near future.
Yeah, and even if part of the cryptocurrency craze are not even craze, but part of the value in cryptocurrency is the anonymous ownership of those coins. But one way
right.
that Uncle Sam is able to track it is if you convert that to cash, they're going to see that influx into whatever account you have, and you're going to have to justify that influx. And just like if you pull out more than $9,999 out of your bank account, you're going to have to fill out a separate IRS form because Uncle Sam's going to want to know what you're doing with that money. And that's kind of their way of putting a flag on it so they can track it a lot better. Cryptocurrency is going to be the same way, that even if you have these Bitcoin millionaires who did earn $1 million, if it's still in cryptocurrency, they might be able to hide it or even transfer it to a foreign bank account. That's becoming harder and harder, especially after the U.S. has cracked down on those overseas funds. But as more, I want to use the term, I guess, regular or amateur investors get involved in cryptocurrency and that have diversified accounts, they're going to want to take that money out and utilize it for traditional investments as well. And that's where Uncle Sam's going to get his money. And remember, Uncle Sam the U.S. government didn't get Al Capone in prison for
right.
the bootlegging, the killing, the organized crime. They got him into prison for tax evasion. When the government
tax
really wants
evasion.
To come and get you, they're coming for that tax evasion, and you're not going to beat them. So Uncle Sam always wants his money, and fees always wins, does not believes in making sure you understand what your investment and the risk that you're incurring. Also be aware of the fees you're being charged, but please always pay your taxes because we don't want to see anyone hemmed up like Wesley Snipes or Lauryn Hill. It's not a nice look.
It's not a nice look at all. like Wesley. I haven't seen Wesley in movies that are in actual theaters in a while. So I'm just saying, pay your taxes, people.
At least Wesley had a couple of movies that did focus in the theater. But it's like Nick Cage just gave up on movies that could profit. He's just like, I'm just trying to pay this bill down.
Nick Cage is just taking checks. I think Nick Cage might be in a movie that talks about garbage men superheroes next. That's the quality of movie I've seen from him lately. So, yeah, exactly. The most money he can get, he's trying to do whatever he can to pay it off.
Yeah, and I think he had a pretty big fee for what he owed the government. But he didn't find it because Wesley Snipes just said, I do not have to pay taxes because I consider myself my own country. And the government said, all right, you're sure, you're sure? Or you're sure, you're sure? And that's why I got thrown in prison for a year.
Bitcoin in January, you'd have over 20,000 in December. But if you cashed out, you could owe the government upwards of $7,000. According to Uncle Sam, Bitcoin is not currency, it's property. That means whenever you buy something with Bitcoin, it's not one transaction, it's two. What you're actually doing is selling a property for a cash value, and then using money from that sale to buy a product. So every purchase you make with Bitcoin has to be reported in your taxes. And with Bitcoin's value constantly changing, keeping track of all that data could be a nightmare come tax time. But let's say you're just holding onto Bitcoin as an investment. You've watched the value grow and now want to cash out. If you've held those Bitcoins for less than a year, that cash will be taxed as income. If you've held for over a year, be ready to give the IRS as much as 20% of what you've gained. Tack on transaction and accounting fees, and you could be out up to 60%, as was the experience of one early Bitcoin adopter. But here's the problem. Almost no one does it. From 2013 to 2015, less than 900 people each year reported Bitcoin transactions to the IRS. That's out of millions just counting the number of users on crypto exchange Coinbase alone. That prompted the IRS to label cryptocurrency as property back in 2014. And to recently serve a summons to Coinbase. They called for the records of over 14,000 users who have bought, sold, sent, or received at least $20,000 worth of Bitcoin in a given year. A federal court ultimately ruled in favor of the IRS, but the tax fate of those transactions is still unknown. Moving forward, though, there may be some relief. A bipartisan bill, the Cryptocurrency Tax Fairness Act, was presented to Congress in September. It's seeking to create a tax exemption for crypto transactions under $600. So there is some hope for amnesty, but with the price of Bitcoin skyrocketing, Uncle Sam still looks poised to get a decent cut of the action.
I actually, I've heard an argument against the idea of federal taxes versus state taxes, but we'll have that discussion for another day. So there are those out there that feel like they shouldn't have to pay federal taxes, that it should be done on a state level, but like I said, that's a discussion for another day. For the time being, pay your taxes, people.
For the time being, absolutely. And just to point it out, Nick Cage owed the IRS $6.2 million, and he didn't pay it off until this year. Or no, I'm sorry. Okay, he paid it off in 2012, but this was just his tax bill from 2007. That's really what hit him up. He owed a total of $14 million, and that's why you see him in five movies a year that nobody cares about. And remember,
terrible movies.
Nick Cage isn't he an Oscar winner for that Raising Arizona film?
Isn't he related to, like, Francis Ford Coppola too? Like, he's a part of Hollywood royalty.
Yeah,
to be fair.
I think his real
doing
last
terrible movies.
I think his real last name is Coppola. He changed it to Cage because he wanted to earn the opportunities on his own merits, which is that's admirable. And he's in some of my favorite movies, something like Matchstick Men, Lord of War. He has some gems in there, and then just straight garbage. Like
The Wicker Man.
Yeah, after The Wicker Man, I feel like he's close. The only other parallel I could think of, an Oscar winner who just gave up on trying to do good movies, is Cuba Gooding Jr.
After Snow Dogs. No, not even Snow Dogs. Didn't he do something about a boat trip or something before that? I don't even know. Yeah. It hasn't gone too well for Cuba, although lately he did the show about OJ. He had a comeback there. But speaking of taxes in general, the reason we say pay them is not only that. Think about people in the past. You had James Brown talking about burying money in fields and places, and then you had Red Fox. There has been so many people that basically fell off based on taxes. Just something to consider.
Man, Lauryn Hill.
Ah, Lauryn Hill. The miseducation of Lauryn Hill. That goes in so many different ways. That's not just musically, apparently.
Ah, it means something completely different than it did when the album came out. Like, I don't even think she has the masters to her music. So when you see her live, she can't play the actual instrumental that you're familiar with the songs. That they have to have a different instrumental, and it's kind of sped up or slowed down because she can't play that. She doesn't have the rights, nor did she want to pay for those rights.
See, that in itself is a Shakespearean tragedy. Like, the woman puts out dope music, and she can't even play the dope music she used to put out. That's terrible.
Now, and for years, I was a Lauryn Hill aficionado, and then I was like, how wrong am I? Like, Erykah Badu had so much of a deeper, better catalog. And Lauryn Hill, it's really just because I think it's that time frame when the Miseducation came out, and then the second Fugees album came out, that I was like, I was coming into my musical own at that point. So it impacted me a lot different than the early Erykah Badu catalog. But Erykah Badu's just straight heat every album she releases.
Not only that, not only is she straight heat, apparently she influences other rappers as well, because once she is able to influence them with whatever her aura or purpose or mysticism is, you have Andre 3000 who takes it up to another level. Common went through a phase, but lyrically, you know, he's there. Jay Electronica, we've been waiting on the album forever, but I mean, as far as rappers, and then I'm forgetting about
D.O.C.?
I'm forgetting about the D.O.C. So, I mean, she not only puts out great music, she influences a bunch of the greatest artists of all time. Like, Andre 3000 for me is up there. I know everybody says Jay-Z and Nas, but apparently Jay-Z and Nas need to marry Erykah Badu to go to a next level. Hot take of the day.
And to keep it hip-hop, have you read about Nas's Queen Bridge Financial Group?
Oh, yeah. They invested in Lyft, I think, right? And Amazon bought a company for them. And for Ring. Like $1 billion.
Yeah.
Ring, yes.
He was one of the early investors in Ring. And so they said it was a real come up, but they said his portfolio is so diversified. That's what him and – so what's blowing my mind is all in my head I could see is Shorty, You Owe Me. And
Uchiwali.
And Nas is like, nah, it's my brother Jungle that gives them all these, like, Jungle's the one who's gotten the penetration in that market. And that's where they've made so much money just off of this. Like, they said something on the Ring deal that he probably made $20 to $40 million. I'm not sure if he's earned that from music over his entire illustrious career.
Right. Because he doesn't own his own masters, I think. Like, he owns his masters for Illmatic, he probably will make a nice profit, but nowhere near $20 to $40 million.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think he's ever going to come back from it's hard for him to focus on music when this investing thing. And apparently, Queensbridge, and the name comes from Nas, is from Queensbridge area of New York. But that's based out of L.A., so they're close to all these venture capitalists and Silicon Valley. And I imagine they moved to L.A. for that reason, that you have San Jose right there where you could interact with these investors on a daily basis, which is a lot harder than New York.
It's interesting seeing that come up, though, because a couple of years ago, Nas was a joke for child support based on the money he had to pay police, and now nobody's talking about that anymore, because look at the moves the man is making in investing. That's a non sequitur anymore. It's like, forget that. Look at what he's actually doing with his money, the money that he does have, and the return he's getting.
And it must mean something, because you've never really heard Khalees say a bad thing about Nas.
No.
So, like, of course, you heard the previous wife or girlfriend, which much of the Jay-Z beef was about, but you don't hear those same things from Khalees. And whenever they try to bring him up, Khalees is like, nah, we're good. Like, Don't try to put our relationship in a bad light and project your inadequacies on us and the child that we're raising. So, like, and Nas is doing it. It just shows you diversifying, because I think also Ashton Kutcher has his own company as well, and he's working with the billionaire that's part of that funding and how he got entry to it. So it makes sense when you have athletes, like they said, Kevin Durant, the whole reason he wanted to go to Golden State is to be closer to Silicon Valley, because he wants to diversify in that sense. And so working with the founders of Oracle, who owned the team, that's given them access to additional markets that weren't available in Oklahoma. Oklahoma's oil and gas. That's a dying industry. Right. As much money you could make probably for the next 15 years, that Silicon Valley impact is going to last a lot longer. And it's a lot more diversified connections you could make being out in the Bay Area than come through the Oklahoma City airport.
That's true. But even with Steph Curry, when everybody basically thought he was crazy for going to Under Armour, he has ties to their stock as well. So he's not just somebody that's getting paid for a shoe. He's invested in stock prices and the benefits that come that way also, which is something most athletes never even thought to do before. So we're starting to see athletes and entertainers take it to another level in regards to making money, not just making money, but making their money work for them. Which ultimately is the goal. It's funny you bring up Ashton Kutcher, because on 2.5 Men, I remember on the episode, he had a laptop, and on his laptop, he put stickers of his companies on there. And So when the episode aired, I think the people over the show were mad because he basically was making profits for himself. But that was a couple of years ago.
But no, you're absolutely right. It's kind of mind-blowing where you're seeing that the athlete's mind is, especially that people think they're just so focused on one aspect. That you've always heard about the LeBron relationship with Warren Buffett, that he's wanted to be invested and diversified for a while, so he seeks out that influence to do so. And now you're having these athletes getting ownership shares and brands of beverage brands was that first expansion. I'm listening recently to a podcast. It's called Business Wars. So the first one was a 6-part series. They went over Netflix versus Blockbuster and that come up and the conflict that was inherent in there. And then this current one, this current series, looks like it'll finish about at 7 episodes. It's kind of an extension of what we've talked about in the past, which kind of got my gears thinking, is Adidas versus Nike. And you see that I remember, and this could probably get so much deeper, but I remember when Kanye left Nike, people were like, you're crazy. You don't need more influence. You don't deserve more influence. Why do you think you have this impact? And basically, he's designed the whole new Adidas style when it comes to the use of the fabrics and the twill versus the traditional athletic shoe. And I feel that he has a similar relationship with Adidas that Jordan has with Nike.
This is what I wonder with Kanye. First and foremost, houseway, I just had to say it. But will we appreciate Kanye more than we do now in the next 20, 30 years when we have a greater scope of just how talented he is? Or will we truly be able to appreciate him in the moment? Because if you look at him and the things that he's done and the things that he wants to do, he's truly ahead of his time. Because like you said, LeBron used to be with Nike, Kobe used to be with Nike, and then they all left to go to Nike. Well, now you're starting to see a shift where Adidas is starting to really surge, and Kanye West is a big part of that. I know people are going to say James Harden. No, Kanye West is a key contributor to that.
And you're right, because Kanye West was there and redesigned and influenced Adidas, they were able to get James Harden from Nike. Because the whole thing with James Harden, he wore his Jordans up until the day his Adidas contract kicked in. That he loved Nike, and he probably would have taken less if it wasn't for the direction that the company was going. But I remember Adidas really didn't take off with the Kevin Garnett deal, though they basically gave him a lifetime contract. Like Tracy McGrady, I don't even think Tracy McGrady's are considered iconic. Like, there's not one shoe in that line that people are like, that's an iconic shoe for Tracy McGrady or Garnett. It wasn't until Derrick Rose kind of got in there. You got about two shoes out of that selection of five that were really influential. But now you see everything basically is a build off of the Yeezy's influence. And
right.
And low key, I see it myself. Yes, growing up, I had the shell toe Adidas that are universal. Seems like every 15 years, those come back in style. In fact, last year, they said the shell toes were a top five selling shoe still, which is mind-blowing in itself. And I know it's mind-blowing for my uncles who are now close to 50 years old, and they wore the shell toes when they were B-boys and break dancers. It just goes back to say, you're right. Because I took a step back, I could appreciate Kanye in the moment. He is kind of a voice of his generation, as crazy as that sounds. He is. Like, you think of his musical influence, you think of the style influence in hip-hop, the style outside of hip-hop, the use of instrumentation and redoing the samples in hip-hop again. He is a voice of his generation, and sure, he has his problems. He's self-centered. He's sometimes too woke, and then will transition right back to unwoke. He's an icon, to say the least.
He is. I mean, if I were to go back and listen to the Sway interview from years ago, I may look at it differently, knowing what I know now versus what I knew then. Which is crazy, because that became like a cultural event. But if you really go back and listen to what he's saying, and then you see the product that he's producing and the things that he's doing, he kind of had a point, a bigger point than maybe we gave him credit for initially.
I do recommend everybody check out Business Wars. It's great just to see kind of the background and how companies emerge versus established industries, how a company comes in and disrupts that industry, and what are the two directions that it could go. Because you realize Adidas used to be the shoe of the NBA in the 70s when the Celtics were winning, and then it went to the wayside as Nike came out and kind of took over that company and the brand. And then Adidas came back and bought Reebok to get the contract of Nike, and that's really its real emergence back into American sports.
Kind of interesting to see the trend that is happening, because I mean, right now we're talking about it, but in the next 2 to 5 years, I'll be curious to see how Nike responds to Adidas, basically, and you know, the campaign that they're putting together, the strategy that they're putting together. How are they going to? Because Nike is still on top, but Adidas is surging, and if they continue this rate, it'll be neck and neck before you know it.
And this would be the last one. I think the stat that they mentioned on the podcast was Nike had a sports market share of more than 94% at the beginning of the decade. And now it's down to a market share of like 80s or low or high 70%, which doesn't sound like a lot. But when you're talking billions of dollars, that's a big difference.
Right. It makes a difference. Everything makes a difference. Whenever you see that trend line, wherever that trend line is going, any movement one way or another makes a difference.
Well, I do appreciate everybody for joining us today. This episode went much longer than we intended, but I felt like it was a good discussion, and it might even be broken up in three parts. Please look for The Dividend is kind of a second segmentation of our show, which is kind of the pre-talk when we're not really focused on stocks or investing, but our conversations before we get into our dedicated path for the show. So look for The Dividend. It comes out 3 to 4 days after the release of the main episode. And then we're going to keep adding addendums there. We're looking to grow the show, so please give us a 5-star rating and we'll read it on the show. Rate us in iTunes. That gets our attention. We now are listed in iTunes, which is an exciting change that they've accepted the show. And you could find us on almost any podcatcher now as a result. And listen to it, share it with your friends. And we're looking forward to engaging with the audience in any way that we can. Please tell us your success stories, the stories that you've learned from investment opportunities. And if you have any segment ideas, send them in. We're welcome to that. And this, when we say this is an investment club, while we might be the host of the show, we want to grow it. So I do at least mentally see us putting together a group in Facebook down the road to grow and post information that are similar to what our daily chats are and links that we send back to each other, because we want to see everybody grow. We especially want to see amateurs turn into professionals and diversify your accounts and your income stream.
And I just like to add that, yes, we did kind of go a little long, but it was an insightful conversation. To all the people listening, we're two people that are in the process of learning as well. We're putting the pieces together to the puzzle, and we can use all the help we can get to, you know, come together. And for all the people listening, thank you for taking your time out to enjoy us and our conversations and the information we're trying to and put our own, you know, portfolios together. So thank you.
Absolutely. And before I go, you know Miley Cyrus is worth $201 million?
Wait, what?
Being a culture vulture is profitable.
One?
Two?
Wait, does she like... Oh, is she an independent artist or something? Or is that off of side deals? Or she is that just off of music?
$76 million came from endorsements.
Huh.
So that means 200 the 124 other million come from the album and touring. I'm blown away.
Wow.
No idea.
I would have never guessed. That should have been one of the questions you asked me. I would have never guessed that one.
Yeah, we might have to play this game in another episode of what are they worth and how did they get there? So maybe we'll be able to pull some insight out of that.
That's like Vanilla Ice. I forget his net worth, but Vanilla Ice is worth a lot more than you believe. Yeah, that may be something to look into in the future. Miley Cyrus, by all means, man. Hey, good
Miley
job.
Miley Cyrus is worth more than Eminem.
Let this sink in for a moment. Wow.
Man.
You just blew my mind at the end of this. I wasn't expecting that.
Me neither.
Alrighty then.
Alright. Wow. Well, I'll speak to you later. Good conversation. Tell the missus hello. And when she wants to jump into the group, just add her to the group. And so as we grow it externally, we should grow it internally as well, adding people that we're close to.
I agree. I completely agree. Chris, as always, man, it's been a pleasure.
All right, I'll speak to you later. Show will probably be out tomorrow or Monday.
New Year's Eve, 2015. Kanye West, the biggest rapper in the world, has just dropped a new single, as he often does on the last day of the year. In 2014, it was just one single, an ode to his infant daughter. This year, it's Facts, an ode to his sneakers. More specifically, it's an ode to his sneaker line for Adidas called Yeezy. Kanye debuted it just a few months earlier after leaving Nike for the three stripes. The Yeezys have been tremendously successful. Stores can't keep them in stock, and the media hype around the shoes is as big as anything that ever greeted the launch of a Nike shoe. And now, in Facts, Kanye is taking a victory lap. He's rubbing it in. Then comes the infectious hook. Just jumped over Jumpman.
just jumped over, jumped.
He's talking about Michael Jordan. Is there some hyperbole in there? Of course there is. Nike has hardly resorted to giving sneakers away. Between the main Nike brand and the Jordan brand, it still owns about 46% of the sneaker market in the U.S. But Adidas is making all the right moves, and the Yeezys are only part of it.
The opinions expressed on the show do not reflect the thoughts of our respective employers, family, or podcast network. We are not licensed by the FTC or SEC. Before acting on information on the website or from the show, you should consider whether it's suitable for your particular circumstance and seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor.